released last Friday, week ago, and it would have been the first showing. It was a little less than what we were planning. So that trailer is Jesus the Game Changer Series 2. It's going to be released on TBN US in the second week of September. It'll be available in Australia on DVDs for those of you who still have a DVD. That will be available and be used across this country. It's following Jesus the Game Changer 1. For those of you who don't know about Jesus the Game Changer 1, this church, many churches in Adelaide have already used it as across Australia. And that's still available. So if you feel that would be helpful for you or somebody that you know. But this is not an ad. This is just to let you know the things that we've done. This is the world's largest tract. Remember the tracts you used to put in your back pocket? This is the content of Jesus the Game Changer in a beautiful coffee table book. If you have a business, you want to leave it somewhere, it's an evangelistic tool. That's our passion behind this. And we also have just released, in the last few months, Game Changers, World Shakers and Real Life Superheroes. This is introducing the greats of Christian faith over the centuries, including Australians alive today, to a new generation. It's a kid's book. You can read it yourself to your kids or your grandchildren, or they can, if they're old enough, they can read it themselves. Beautifully illustrated, and it's basically just some of the fabulous lives that have touched people across the globe, introducing them to the person of Jesus and the name of Jesus. So that's available. Chris, sales. Everything. Yeah, Chris is on a commission, as a matter of interest. That's why he's so enthusiastic. I really appreciate Chris helping. So if that is helpful for you, remember this, for us as Olive Tree Media and what we do, this is not about money. This is about people using these tools in ministry. But this morning is something completely different. You're in the middle of your series, Upside Down, and looking through the Beatitudes, and we're looking at persecution this morning. Now, Jason had talked to me about the whole issue around Israel Folau, and part of it was this: what is a Christian response? What is our response? How do we view that particular issue? Now, for those of you who have never heard of Israel Folau, have you been living under a rock? Just in case. Now, I'm sure there's probably some of you who don't and haven't and have no idea what we're talking about. Israel Folau plays rugby union. It's a kind of game similar to AFL, just slightly more organised. And rugby union, he's probably the best known rugby union player in Australia, maybe even globally, certainly is now. He was paid on a $4 million contract with the Australian Rugby Union. And that contract was ripped up and he was sacked about a couple of months ago. And it was ripped up and he was sacked because he'd put a post on Facebook, his Instagram feed, which was about Christian faith. And basically it was a post that said, "This group of people are all going to hell unless you repent." Now the list, if you've seen it, is a whole bunch of lists. It's adulterers, it's liars, it's fornicators, there's all sorts. But on the list was the name homosexual. And because Folau had put that on the list, because the Rugby Union Australia wanted to be totally inclusive, they felt they needed to exclude Israel Folau so they could be inclusive. There's a little loss of logic in that, but let's not be caught up. But from a serious point of view, this young guy is brilliant footballer, brilliant sportsman, but a deeply committed Christian. Some of his theology is a little, but deeply committed Christian. Puts this post up. He says, he hasn't commented much, because he loves people and he wants to know their eternal destiny unless they turn to Jesus. But the rugby union decided that they would sack him. As an aside, you probably also know, if you haven't been following this story, you might be interested to know that this is a huge legal issue. And so Folau decided to set up a GoFundMe page. GoFundMe is a platform, an online platform to raise funds. He raised, within about 4 days, he raised $700,000 Australian dollars. Then the American GoFundMe group, because they'd had so much pressure put on them from activists to stop Folau raising funds, they closed his page down and said they would return all the money to all of these people, which seemed to the activists like a great win. Except that then the Australian Christian Lobby opened up their own funding page. Keep this in mind, this is important for this morning, this is not just a story. In 2 days, they raised 2 million dollars. And then they closed the fund down because they believed they had enough money. Here is an incredible issue. And the issue wraps around a bunch of issues like, is this persecution? Is this religious persecution? Is this just a contractual issue? What is a fair, right, and godly response to this issue? So it encapsulates all sorts of ways of thinking about what it is to be a Christian in today's Australia. What does it mean to be a Christian in Western democratic nations? Is this the leading edge of persecution? Is persecution on the way? Is this a harbinger of what's going to happen? Or is this a moment in time? How do we see this? And so I actually want to explore a bunch of issues around the topic, not mentioning a great deal about Israel Folau again, but just saying, here's the context in which we're talking about this issue. We filmed Jesus the Game Changer 2, that fabulous trailer, which you missed. We'll play at the end. Oh, good job. Yoo-hoo. So when we filmed it, we actually filmed at a thing called the Tyburn Tree. Now, there's a very good chance that none of you have heard of the Tyburn Tree, mainly because it doesn't actually exist and it's not actually a tree. The Tyburn Tree, if you know London at all, between Marble Arch and Hyde Park on just a road in the middle of nowhere, there's a round plaque. It's about this big on the footpath. And on the footpath it says Tyburn Tree. The Tyburn Tree was where they used to execute people who were political separatists or criminals that they wanted to get rid of in London. When they hung people on the Tyburn Tree, it was a great event. They would set up stands. People would get there early to get the front seats, and they would basically just hang people all day on the Tyburn Tree. But in 1593, there were two men hung on the Tyburn Tree. They were hung early before any crowds turned up, and their names were Henry Barrow and John Greenwood. They were hung not because they were political separatists or criminals in any way. They were hung because they were religious separatists. They wouldn't be a part of the Church of England Church. They wanted the freedom to function as free of that system and to worship God and to read his word and to explore faith in what it meant for them. If you wonder why people in 1620 got on the Mayflower ship in southwestern England and travelled to America to start a new colony, as I say on this series, don't look any further than the Tyburn Tree. America as a nation was set up for freedom of faith, freedom of religion, freedom of conscience, and freedom of expression. And those things for modern Western liberal democratic nations are foundational concepts. And as we think about the Folau issue, as we think about is this persecution, as we think about what is it that we should stand for as people who follow and love Jesus, we need to stand for freedom of thought, conscience, faith, and religion. And the important thing is it's not just our religion. You and I need to stand for ideas that we disagree with in the sense that they are allowed to be expressed. That's important and foundational. Apparently people say Voltaire said this, and then other people say who knows said it, but Voltaire said something like, I disagree completely with what you say, but I will fight to the death for your right to say it. That's what's at stake in our nation. That's a place we need to act. We shouldn't defend vilification of people. We shouldn't defend hate speech. We shouldn't defend things that are calling for violence against people. But speech that you hate is not necessarily hate speech. And here's the space in which we function. Now, we as those who are looking for freedom of faith, belief, religion, expression, and conscience, that need to recognize that that's not because this will mean the church will grow, and if we don't stand for that, the church will fail. The church has always grown under persecution. There's always been persecution right from the very start of the Christian church across the ages. Persecution has always been a part of the church. In fact, on the new series, we have one episode, as we're looking at the faith going across the world, one episode is purely on persecution. And essentially, wherever the church has been, wherever the church has grown, persecution has always been a part of the experience of the church. But is this persecution? Are Christians being persecuted? Are we in a place, we're in a dangerous place as Christians in this country? Is this Is this the beginning of the kind of end for freedom for Christians? Well, it's a very mixed picture. If this is your area, if this, you love looking at stats and all that sort of thing, there's a website called faithandbelief.org.au. Faith, A-N-D, andbelief.org.au. Completely free site. You can go there and download a 54-page PDF if that's what you're desperate for, or a PowerPoint that has more PowerPoint slides than you'll ever want to look at. And essentially what we did with a group called McCrindle, Olive Tree Media, with McCrindle Research and some others, asked the question, what do Australians think of Christianity and the church? And it's all on that site if you'd like to look at it. But I want to just draw your attention to a couple of outcomes. Now, you, if I said to you, so what do Australians think of Christianity and the church? I won't get you to answer, but I want you to think about what do you think? Because you're told all the time what Australians think of Christianity and the church. You're told what all the time, you know, what they think. And most of the time, it's negative, isn't it? So 92, when we asked people, McCrindle asked people, 92% of people said they know at least one Christian. There was only a small percent that said they only knew one. Lots knew many more. So you've got a large bulk of people. Then they were given 20 words to describe the Christians that they knew. And they were to put down, what are the top three words that describe the Christians that you know? Now, most of you will think, oh, I know the sorts of things they would have said. I want to give you, of the 92% of people who knew a Christian, these are the top words that they said. Caring, loving, kind, honest, faithful. Now, hypocrisy, judgmental, rude, were all on the list. And they were way down the list. Now, just in case you think, oh, well, that's just, you know, bad research. I'm sure he just didn't do a very good job. There's another piece of research done in England, and it's called, I'll tell you at the end of the service, just after we play the trailer. And this piece of research did the same thing in England. And they asked the same thing. What are the Christians that you know like? And all top responses were positive responses. People in Australia were asked, are you a Christian? Now, I want to keep this in mind. This is not a theological test. This is just an indication of where you stand. 38% of Australians said they were a Christian. Now, you're probably going, they're not Christians. Just leave it there. 38% believed they were. Of the rest, the other 62% that were left, they were asked, what do you think? You know, how close are you to Christian faith? Without going into all the details, 24% of respondents actually responded with a warm response. Now, they're saying, I'm not a Christian. But I actually like the values of Christians. That's essentially one of the things very close to the kingdom of God. So you actually have 64% of Australians who either say they are Christians or agree with the basic tenets of Christian faith. And then there's one other thing to put into this question about the cultural context of Australia, and that's the last election. Who would have thought Scott Morrison was going to win? No pollster, that's for sure. And the really interesting thing is that Scott Morrison is probably the most public, out there, Christian, Pentecostal even, that Australia's ever seen. Yet he won the unwinnable election. All that says is, and I know you're all thinking, yeah, but that what about Shorten's policies and all that sort of stuff? Yes, I know you're saying that, but here's the deal. They didn't just vote against him because he was a follower of Jesus. You look at the growth of Christian radio stations across Australia. Most of you may not listen to Christian radio, and you probably did once and decided never to do it again. But here's the deal about Christian radio. It's incredibly popular. You know that the last polls, the last McNair poll, is actually saying that over 4 million Australians listen to Christian radio at least once a month. Now, here's the deal. That doesn't mean they're all Christians. All it's saying is this. As soon as they hear it's Christian, they don't turn off. One of the greatest growing sectors in schools across this country is, guess what? Christian schools. Do they send their kids to Christian schools because they want them to be Christian? No, because they like the values of the school. But the deal is they don't stop because they're Christian. You put all these pieces of information together, the polls, the election, schools, radio, and any other number of areas of looking at it, and you go, you can't really say that we're under persecution. You can't really say that we're in this terrible state where the very future and fabric of the church is at stake. And you need to ask, you need to basically, in a way, be encouraged as you leave today to say that the world is not against you. The world is not against us. It's not like the sky's about to fall in. But what I tell you, it does tell you, don't listen to the commentariat. Don't spend all your time listening to the commentariat or the media elites telling you what Australians think about Christianity, faith and belief, because they simply, they're inaccurate. They reflect their little world. They don't reflect the whole of Australia. But what it does say is that we're in a place where we're kind of in a cultural, we're out of step with a lot of the culture of our community. It's not persecution, but it's cultural out of stepness, for want of a better term. I said last night that one of the things that's motivated our doing this series, Jesus the Game Changer, is this. We've moved from Christian faith, say 100 to 150 years ago, in countries like Australia being pretty much central. That didn't mean everybody was Christians. Although, do you know, in the 1800s, in the first census ever done in Australia, do you know that everyone was a Christian? Everyone. They all came here as convicts. There was a discipleship issue, but they're apparently all Christians. Really, that didn't change. 1900, it was 96% of Australians said they were Christian. Still through the 1960s, it was still way into the 90s. And it was between the 1960s to now where you've got a growth to 30% saying that they're non-believers or they're nuns. The interesting thing is, as in no belief, not clerical order, here's the deal. You've got this sense of it used to be central. And then in the 60s and 70s and 80s, it kind of became irrelevant. Only kind of super spiritual people did that in their own time. But it's a bit irrelevant to life. We've moved again, probably from the turn of the millennia, that we're now seen as a bit of a dangerous idea in certain circles. As Paul Kelly wrote in The Australian, the editor-at-large or writer-at-large for The Australian, the progressives' goal in Australian society is to take religion out of the public square. And this notion that somehow we've become a dangerous idea, this idea that we need to be considered as a dangerous idea. What we need to stand up for in the midst of all of that, in the midst of that change, and being seen as sort of out of step with the culture, being seen as kind of cultural opposition to where we stand, is first of all, we need to continue to stand for free speech so we're able to continue to spread and talk about the message of Jesus. I don't know if you've heard of a guy called Jonathan Haidt, as in H-A-I-D-T. He's written a book called Coddling of the American Mind. Jonathan Haidt's an intellectual, started off in that kind of left-wing side of politics. I'm not sure where he would say he stood these days, but Jonathan Haidt had a real change in his life when, and I read a piece about this, where he was, that Trump was being elected, he was out, in the universities, protesting with everybody else that this was happening. And as he looked around, he saw a whole bunch of students who were now sitting in safe spaces with comfort dogs and nice music and colouring in books. And he's like, what is going on with our nation? And what he noticed is that there was this sort of shift, and this is important for this area of free speech. There was a shift that was happening a lot in universities, was this sense of, if somebody's in danger physically, we need to protect them physically from the danger that they face. And most of us, we would most all say, that's a good thing. But what happens when emotional, physical dangers get shifted, that attitude gets shifted into emotional dangers? What happens when ideas confront me and I don't like them? And what was happening is that the shift from physical danger into this being concerned about something that would endanger my emotions, because it's an idea that confront my thinking, that we needed to create safe spaces for people, and we need to de-platform speakers that we disagree with because they might emotionally damage me. He calls that safetyism. And safetyism, where ideas become dangerous, and so that ideas are taken out of the public square and can't be debated because they're dangerous ideas that might hurt my feelings, that becomes a space that we need to be careful of. Because to be frank, the Christian gospel ought to hurt people's feelings. I don't mean being rude. I mean, that's where we stand. And there's all sorts of ideas where we need to stand for freedom of speech. What do we do in the midst of cultural oppression? What do we do with, even if there was coming oppression and persecution? How do we respond in that space? What does it mean for us? And here's a couple of things to say. One, how you live and act matters. How you live and act matters. Your actions matter. When we did the research, guess what one of the blockers to faith, when we asked what blocks you from Christian faith, the top was hypocrisy. Now, that doesn't mean everybody thinks Christians are all hypocrites. But when they asked what blocks you from considering Christian faith more freely and fully, it was actually around the issue of hypocrisy. Peter, when he writes to the church in 1 Peter chapter 2, he says this, "Dear friends, I urge you as aliens and strangers in the world." Now keep that in mind. You're in the world, but you're not part of it. You're an alien and stranger in this world. Because that's the case, live such good lives among the pagans that though they accuse you of doing wrong, they may see your good deeds and glorify your Father in heaven. Now, Christians in this age, in the first century, were under persecution. Not all the time and not in every place, but they were under persecution. But they were also, when Peter says, though they accuse you of doing wrong, Christians were seen as those who were actually cannibals because they were eating the body and blood of Christ. They were seen as those who were involved in incestual relationships because they were in relationship with their brothers and sisters in Christ. They were actually accused of being atheists because they believed only in one God. In a polytheistic world where there's multiple gods, that was quite acceptable. To say there's only one God was a weird way to live. And they were seen as subversive because they wouldn't honour and worship the emperor like everybody else was. In that, they were all seen as kind of a negative influence within the community. And what does Peter say? Whatever you do, however you live, live such good lives so that people can look to you and say, those people live out the values of the God that they serve. When we fail to live out the values of the God that we say that we serve, we're in a place where we can be condemned, and quite readily so. Hypocrisy. Now, nobody's free of hypocrisy. Our whole community, in a sense, everybody's hypocritical in the community because nobody completely lives up to the values that they say they espouse. But we need to be those who live to these values as clearly as we can. Secondly, when talking about Jesus, tone matters. When talking about Jesus, tone matters. If you go to just the next chapter of 1 Peter, when he talks to the church in chapter 3, verse 15, he says, "But in your heart set aside Christ as Lord. Always be prepared to give an answer to anyone who asks for a reason for your hope that you have. But do this with gentleness and respect." I support Israel Folau's right to write whatever, right to post whatever he wants. That's about free speech. I do not endorse what he wrote. And I think that that's the space we all need to be in. Is that a space of gentleness and respect? Is it a space with treating people with love and grace? And we need to ask ourselves, when we're talking about Jesus, whether we, no matter how right or we feel we are, gentleness and respect ought to be the tone of everything that we say. There's no place for people who are dismissive, abusive in how they respond or talk about the person of Jesus. And finally, don't be ashamed of the gospel. Paul actually says in Romans 1, verse 16, "I'm not ashamed of the gospel." You know, I actually think that in today's world, in Australia, in Western countries, that verse is one that we ought to kind of tattoo on our bodies. Move on, okay? We ought to put that everywhere. Because we ought to ask ourselves, in a place where religion and faith and Christian faith has moved from irrelevant to dangerous, where you've seen them sort of subversive to the culture and there's cultural opposition, ask yourself this. Are you actually ashamed of the gospel? Paul wants to make, now keep this in mind, that in when he writes to the church at Corinth, in chapter 1, remember, Paul is a brilliant mind, a brilliant thinker, a great speaker, a great person who could use rhetoric to argue his position. He was held in the elite, cultural, intellectual elite of that society. And yet in 1 Corinthians, he actually says, you know, they see us as foolish. Where's the wise man? Where is the scholar? God has made foolish the wisdom of this world. Because he says, what we preach, the Jews demand a miraculous sign and Greeks look for wisdom, but we preach Christ, stumbling block for the Jews and foolishness to the Greeks. We're there again, aren't we? Foolishness to the Greeks. And in that context, knowing that all of these people, the Jewish background that he grew up in, sees him as stumbling a block, the great Greek thinkers that he aspired at some time to be a like and respected by, sees him as a fool. And in that context, Paul says, I'm not ashamed of the gospel. And that's important. You know what we need to be really careful of? When we talk about tone and talking about in Jesus in a tone that's respectful, we need to understand this. It's never going to be popular. This is not a popularity contest. I see Christian leaders, and I actually think that it seems like evangelism has become virtue signaling to demonstrate your woke credentials within the community. If you didn't understand that phrase, look it up. Here's this idea that, you know, I need to say the right thing to all the right people so they look at me and go, yes, you're a good person, but I'll never talk about these issues because people will write me off as a stumbling block and a fool. I'm not ashamed of the gospel. That's the space that we're in. I don't think we're in a place of persecution, but we're in a place of cultural opposition. In a place of cultural opposition, we need to live such good lives that we can't accused of being hypocrites at every turn. We need as much as we possibly can to remember that tone matters. When you talk about Jesus, use a loving, graceful, respectful tone, recognizing it's not about being popular. And ask yourself, do I really believe the gospel? Am I willing to stand up for the gospel? That hymn, I think the most subversive thing we can do is actually sing that hymn, I Believe. I'm sure Jason or others have told you the background of that hymn, that chorus written by Hillsong. You know that John Dixon, who's actually on our series, who's an Anglican leader within Sydney, challenged Hillsong because they write such good music, to write write music to the Nicene Creed that was written in the 4th century. That song, in a way, is 1600 years old. And to stand and sing, and every time I did it again this morning, every time I stand and sing that, this is what I believe. I believe that Jesus died. I believe he rose again. I believe in life eternal. I even believe in things that people think are total foolishness, which is the virgin birth. I believe in the church. I'm committed to the church. I believe in the gospel. That's where I stand. That's where we ought to stand. That's not being ashamed of the gospel. Now, if you're sitting here this morning, you think, well, I'm not really sure I believe that. You probably won't say it out loud because it doesn't go down very well over coffee. And you might be there thinking that. You need to deal with that. Following Jesus and being a Christian is not just about being mildly spiritual. It's actually believing that Jesus is God's Son, exactly what you're saying. That his death and resurrection makes a difference for my eternal outcome and destiny. That I cannot save myself. That I'm in a place that I'm distanced from God unless the person of Jesus. That is a hint that I talked too long. And I'm about to finish. Unless I know Jesus personally, I'm in a terrible state. Unless other people around us know Jesus personally, they're in a terrible state. I'm not ashamed of the gospel. And the great thing that grew the church is not only in the face, you know, a Facebook post is not persecution. Okay? There are people across the globe that died for this message. And the reason the church is still alive today is because people died for this message. And we need to understand that if the church is going to grow, it's going to influence Australia. The key is not to be ashamed of the gospel. Thank you, Tara.